Thank you for joining the Buckeye Justice League, where we fight to keep sacred the spirit and principles of the Seventh Amendment for Ohio victims.
I'm your host, Jeremy Burnside, and today I'm joined by Ellen McCarthy, a partner at the Cleveland-based law firm of Nuremberg, Paris, Heller, and McCarthy. Ellen is a graduate of St. Leo University in 1984. She went to the Cleveland State University, Cleveland Marshall College of Law, where she graduated in 1990. And she started off as a law clerk at Nuremberg, Paris, and she's been with them ever since. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
And Ellen, we're going to be talking today about the March 11th, 2008 death of Pauline Miller, a loving wife and mother of two children and a nurse at St. Elizabeth's Hospital. It's my understanding that Pauline's death was caused when an unsuspecting box truck driver struck a pothole, lost control, striking Pauline's car on her while she was on her way to work. It's also my understanding that the state of Ohio claimed immunity and further argued that despite the overwhelming evidence that all pointed to the pothole, the driver never hit it. Ellen, again, welcome to the show. After the accident took place, Ellen, what was it about this case that kind of caught your eye and got you really interested?
Well, what essentially caught our eye was, first of all, that this extraordinary woman died and left an absolutely devastated family and community, because she was very well entrenched in this community. She was a nurse at the local hospital. Everyone knew her. She had a whole lot of activities outside the hospital with her church, with her children, with her husband. And her husband, they were lifelong residents of this area of Columbiana County. And what happened at the scene of this accident was there were a series of gaping, enormous potholes along this roadway that clearly had to have been there for a substantial period of time that were completely unattended. And as taxpayers, you know, we fund the Ohio Department of Transportation, and one of the things we expect them to do is comply with the law with which they're charged to keep the roads in reasonably safe condition. This road was designated the year earlier as a poor performing road, meaning it's slated for repavement because it is in such bad condition, and it has so many potholes along the scope of this road. And this road is situated around Mahoning County and into Columbiana County, almost to the Pennsylvania border. It's a kind of a rural area, and they do get a substantial amount of snow there. So they have a lot of trucks, you know, plowing that area, going over this piece of roadway. So what caused us to stop and think was, we're pretty certain that nobody from ODOT paid much attention to this roadway because it was going to be repaved in a few short months. Once the weather broke, they were going to repave this road. Now, this accident happened in March, and so they probably scheduled this to be repaved in April or May, so they weren't really that concerned about it. And they just kind of took their chances with this roadway, which is what drew us to file a lawsuit in the Court of Claims on behalf of the family to try and figure out why it was this road did not get the proper attention that most roads in Columbiana County were getting at the time.
And Ellen, in regards to your case, and you know, I think you set the stage for the facts of the case. One thing you didn't talk about was the driver's role and whether or not what the arguments were about the fault of the driver, whether or not you argued that the driver was at any percentage at fault, or if the state pointed the finger at the driver.
Well, the state actually pointed the finger pretty seriously at the driver of this box truck. The driver of this box truck was a gentleman who was delivering bulk mail from Pittsburgh to Cleveland. He was going from different garages in those two areas. And he had left Pittsburgh at 1 in the morning, and he was running this bulk mail up to Cleveland. He then delivered his load and was on his way back to Pittsburgh to end his day. He is on this State Route 165 in Columbiana County, and he is heading southbound. And in the southbound lanes of Columbiana County Route 165, there's a crest in the hill. And on his section of the roadway, once you crest the hill and you start downward, the series of potholes start starts to appear. And the potholes were anywhere from 2 inches to 5 inches deep, anywhere from approximately 24 inches round. And the length of this series of potholes was 17 feet. And the next grouping in similar scale was 10 feet. So he would have encountered, an awful lot of deep, deep potholes, all of which fell in the right wheel of his vehicle. So as soon as he crests the hill, he immediately hits a series of potholes. The axle of his vehicle breaks. He goes left of center, and he collides with Pauline Miller's car. He goes right up over the top of her car, and he ends up 180 feet away in a ditch. That's where he finally comes to rest.
They've received notice of the dangers of this pothole?
Absolutely. What had happened, what occurred after this, when the Highway Patrol had shut down the road, and there's EMS and there's all manner of vehicles, the ODOT, within a half hour, had 4 or 5 dump trucks full of patching material ready to patch this series of potholes. It took them no time at all to marshal the effort to get these potholes fixed.
Weren't they told of these potholes well in advance of this?
There was a young man who lived in the area. Now, mind you, this is a farming community, so he lived a few miles from the scene, but he traveled this roadway twice a day to go to school and come back home. 2 to 3 weeks prior to this tragedy, he was in the same position as the truck driver. He was coming up the crest of the hill, heading in the same direction, and he hit the same series of potholes and threw him left of center. Now, he was not driving a boxcar. He was driving a regular small four-door sedan. He went left of center, but luckily there was no oncoming traffic, and he was able to recover and get back in his lane. When he got home, he called the local ODOT office, and he talked to somebody at the ODOT office and reported the location of the potholes on this particular roadway at a particular mile marker, so that they would know exactly where this problem was located, because, 165 is a fairly long piece of, roadway. So he reports it, and ODOT has a computer system to log in phone calls, and it has the capacity to not only log in who the caller is and what number he is calling, he or she is calling, but to identify why they're calling and to store this information. They are not obligated to use that feature of their computer system, so they don't. There is no log of calls kept at ODOT reporting potholes, even though ODOT's website encourages the public to report potholes to the various ODOT offices around the state. So there is no way to go back and say, look, you got a call about this 3 weeks earlier and you did nothing. ODOT, for obvious reasons, keeps no such record. But when this young man was heading out to school that day, he realized there was a serious problem. And he contacted the son of our deceased and said, look, I made a phone call 3 weeks earlier, and I lost control of my vehicle too, and you have my deepest sympathies. If you need me to do anything for you, I'll be happy to explain what I did and when I did it. So not only did he come forward, but there was a gentleman who was in his late 80s who was a farmer and had lived on the corner by this area of 165 for over 50 years. He knew the comings and goings of everybody in the area. He also knew that ODOT was responsible for plowing that area of 165 because he'd been watching it for decades. This accident happened on a Tuesday. On Sunday morning, there was a snowfall, and ODOT came and plowed that road while this man went to church. And when he came home, he saw this path that the ODOT truck snowplow had taken, where the snowplow appeared to have hit the potholes and then went to the right into this large snowbank with its blade, and then appeared as if it backed up and then continued on down 165. So this is a man who lives right there who saw this sort of evidence in the snow, if you will, of what this ODOT snowplow had done in plowing the road in that very area. So when the accident happened, of course, he comes out of his home and goes down in his tractor to where the impact occurred, and ultimately made some contact with our office and said, look, I live on the corner. I can tell you what happened on Sunday. That snowplow truck looked like it hit that series of potholes. That series of potholes had been there for some time because I drive that road every day to go to church. That's important to our case because that gives the state of Ohio notice of a defect. And when the state of Ohio has actual notice of a defect in the road, they are obligated to act upon it and not just let it sit there till the spring when the road gets resurfaced.
And Ellen, how long would it have taken a crew to patch these potholes?
Well, it took ODOT, about 25 minutes that morning to put 7 tons of patching material into these series of potholes. The ODOT employee who was charged with writing up the work order for that day described these potholes as huge, large, deep series of potholes. And 7 tons of patching material was brought to the scene within a half hour. So
wow.
Their ability to get something done in response to a complaint is very quick. I mean, it's amazingly quick. So that the 7 tons of patching material tells you the depth and breadth of these holes that ODOT claimed had nothing to do with the loss of control by the truck driver.
And all it would have taken was 7 tons and 20 minutes of their time to be proactive to save this young lady's life. Boy, that's awfully sad.
And then the
salt on the wounds of the family is their own state saying everything opposite of what all the witnesses are saying, and hiring a hired gun to say that the potholes were not responsible when it was obvious to everyone who had a brain that they were. Ellen,
what was interesting was they really went out of their way to avoid responsibility for this, because the State Highway Patrol took photos of these potholes, and they took photos of the interior of these potholes. Some of these potholes had a variety of patching materials in them. Some of them were cold patching materials. Some of them were just ordinary patching materials, you know, hot patch. So these potholes had been in existence for some period of time and had been filled probably the last winter, filled earlier in the winter. So there was clearly there was an effort to fill these potholes over time. How long that was, we don't know. But this Highway Patrol took photographs, and you could see tire tracks in the pothole because there was patching material, gravel and dirt and things like that in this pothole. And the tire tracks matched up with the tires of the truck that had gone left of center. But what ODOT had done was hire an expert, an outside expert, who chose to disregard any of the statements of the truck driver, not having met the man, not having spoken to him, just completely disregarded everything that person had said, disregard everything the state troopers who interviewed him had to say about his credibility, and came up with a theory that he just drifted left of center and was speeding. And
wow.
They calculated their speed by claiming that there was certain surfaces that he traveled over after the accident that causes them to do some mathematical calculation that can tell them his speed at impact. The problem was the centerpiece for that calculation assumed that he was traveling at all times on the same road surface. So in this case, if he had only stayed on the highway, that would have been perhaps an accurate way to calculate his speed. But the problem was he did not stay on the same road surface when he collided. He went up over the vehicle, so now he's on a different surface. He goes across the vehicle onto a gravelly surface, into the mud, onto the grass, and then into a ditch. So he traveled over several types of surface. And the calculations, admittedly by ODOT's hired expert, he admitted that if he's not on the same surface the entire time until he comes to rest, you cannot rely on my calculations. And if my methodology is faulty, my answers are faulty.
Wow.
And he was fairly easily disposed of at the time of the trial. And the judge didn't believe him. The judge was very skeptical in her opinion, saying the evidence was overwhelming that this pothole existed and that this calculation makes no sense given the nature and extent of the testimony of other people who the judge found to be credible.
And this, and so, Ellen, I don't know if we can keep the audience waiting any longer. What happened?
Well, it's...
Tell me you made them pay.
In the court of claims, what's even more unusual in that you don't get a jury verdict, you have to have two trials. The first trial is on liability. If you get over the hurdle of liability, you then get scheduled for what's called the damages trial, meaning what is the value of the loss to the parties. So the first trial occurred, was fully finished in June of 2011. The court and rendered their opinion saying the truck driver was not at fault, that the sole cause of this accident was ODOT's failure to fill these potholes, of which they had notice. And they issued that decision in March of 2012, so about 8 months after the trial. Then in January of 2013 was the damages phase of the trial. In April of 2013, so we're now talking 4 years after, or 5 years after this event occurred, the Court of Claims issued a judgment against ODOT in the amount of $3,300,000 and some change. That $3.3 million is not exactly what the family received, because the state of Ohio, again, with their gifts from the state legislature, they get all kinds of what are called set-offs or deductions from that amount. So, for instance, in a death case like this, the family had life insurance, and they were prudent enough to buy life insurance on their own, and her employment also provided life insurance. So even though the state of Ohio had nothing whatsoever to do with funding the life insurance policy, that was all funded by the Millers, the state of Ohio got a complete set-off or a deduction from the verdict for life insurance that she was given. And any other monies that the state of Ohio gets a set-off for were all deducted. So in the end, in the final analysis, the actual verdict was $1.8 million and some change that will go to the family.
So Pauline Miller's family, Ellen, is penalized for being responsible. They pay their premiums on their insurance policies. They pay their taxes. And here, not only do they get the state denying responsibility for this terrible accident, but in the end, when they end up losing, they're able to skirt away because of these immunities, like you said, that the legislature provides. And I don't think our audience, members of our audience, really understand the impact that these types of set-offs have on any kind of personal injury or wrongful death case or what we call a tort case. And Ellen, I also understand there was also some health insurance benefits that were paid out. There was also a set off from that. Is that correct?
Sure. Some of the, you know, the funeral bill and all that, those kinds of things were paid by other sources. So the state of Ohio got credit for those. But the real tragedy is, in if you talk about a case where, let's say, another party who was involved, let's say the state of Ohio has some responsibility, and another party, another driver, might share in some of the responsibility. And that other driver's insurance company tenders their policy limits, meaning they offer as much money in insurance as there is. And the state of Ohio is then found to be responsible. The state of Ohio also gets a deduction for that insurance premium, or that insurance amount that was paid on behalf of another driver. So, for instance, if another driver puts in $1,000 and your verdict is $10,000, the state of Ohio gets a deduction for the $1,000. Now, the party, the injured party, doesn't get the full $1,000 that was tendered by the insurance company because of attorney's fees and case expenses. The statute says that the set-off should be what the party received, but the party doesn't receive the full $1,000, yet the state of Ohio takes the full $1,000 credit. So not only do you have to give the state of Ohio all these deductions, but they get more in a deduction than you actually get in your pocket.
Wow.
So there's it's actually further insulting to you. I mean, in our case, the least the state of Ohio should do is have to reimburse the family for all of the premiums they paid for life insurance and for health insurance, but they don't even do that. So it's the state of Ohio gets so many gifts from the state legislature that the citizens don't understand, and when they're in this circumstance, we try to explain it to them, they're absolutely stunned that this is how it works.
Is there a procedure right now where the audience can report large potholes?
Sure, there certainly is. On the ODOT website, they have a box that you can fill in where the pothole is located, your description of the pothole, things like that. The problem is there's no guarantee they ever read it or react to it, but there certainly is a reporting mechanism. We know that ODOT particularly doesn't track or keep a record of people's complaints. Apparently, from what we could discern during the course of this case, they write it on a piece of paper and hand it off to somebody in the maintenance department, and hopefully it gets handled. It's not a guarantee. Your complaint is not a guarantee. What's unfortunate is there should be legislation that requires them to keep track of these things. But if they kept track of them and failed to react to them, it's wonderful evidence when an event like this occurs saying you knew about it, you were told about it, and you failed to do anything about it. It's just, unfortunately, things don't change.
20 minutes, folks. That's all the time it would have taken for them to come out and patch those potholes that have been reported dangerous by at least two individuals. And as a result, the tragic loss of a pretty outstanding lady. Ellen McCarthy, I wanted to thank you again for coming on the Buckeye Justice League.
Thanks for asking.
And I also wanted to thank you for your service to, you know, not just the Millers, but, you know, obviously being a plaintiff's attorney, you face some pretty uphill battles, and I know you to be someone to never shy away from a fight. And that means a lot, especially in this atmosphere where tort reform rules. And if any of the audience members have any questions for Ellen, they can contact her office at 216-621-2300. Ellen, do you have any closing remarks for the audience?
You know, and I share your frustration over the system that we're in, but there's nothing more gratifying than helping a family who's desperately in need of help, and that they're just a victim of somebody else's bad behavior. That's kind of what keeps us going, don't you think? That you get to say to somebody, look, we helped you a little. We did as much as the law will allow us to do. We fought the good fight. We know this doesn't make you whole, but it's going to help you. And there's some gratification in that kind of makes everything else worthwhile, don't you think? I mean, you're in the same shoes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, there's really nothing more appealing to me to get up in the morning to know that, you know, my clients face an uphill battle against a pretty large insurance company, and that I'm not going to let them walk alone, that I'm going to stand up for them every step of the way, and that makes me feel good, and it makes me feel like my job is not a job. It's more of a mission, and I know lawyers such as yourself feel the same way, and I appreciate everything that you do. Ellen, thanks again.
Jeremy, you take care. It's good talking to you.
This podcast contains the opinions of myself and my guests, and the opinions hereon do not necessarily reflect those of our sponsors or supporters. The content shared on this podcast is intended to be a guide, not a substitute of your own due diligence. After all, our opinions on this show can always be wrong. As such, it is incumbent upon you to read the cases and statutes, check their statuses, and obviously consult with the ethics, rules, and opinions before relying on anything you hear on the Buckeye Justice League.